Welcome to HQAF Radio. My name's Francis. And you're listening to a show about two best friends. Welcome back to the show, Chris.
Thank you.
Right before this, just literally before this, Chris asked me how much my new microphone cost.
It was actually less than I was expecting you to say, so.
Really?
Yep. As long as you use your own money, that's fine. So, couples budgeting 101. Have your own stash of cash.
So this is part of our gratitude miniseries, subseries, I don't know, but it's where we take people that we really care about and we really love and tell them that we love them, and we interview them because we want to find out more about them and spotlight them. How does it feel to have the spotlight on you, Chris?
It seems a little late in our relationship to find out about all my secrets and my history and my past, but
it's not,
happy to be
it's
here.
It's not about me finding out.
Oh, it's about your listener. Hey, Catherine.
Wow. Shook. So why don't we get started? Why don't we just dive right in?
All right.
Do you have anything you want to start off with? Any thoughts about mental health?
I would say no, not specifically, but I think in general, I've come to appreciate the importance of taking care of one's mental health, and having dealt with in my family instances where that was definitely not the case, I've learned, and partly through you, the importance of taking care of yourself physically and mentally. Yeah. So,
Alana and I talk about how trying this time has been for all of us, really. How has it been for you?
I think it's been interesting. We have ourselves an interesting situation in that we, you know, are relatively newly married. We bought a new house right before COVID, and so thank God for extra space, but it's definitely been trying. And you know, just even opening up the newspaper means that you're taking a risk on your own mental health, and so yeah. That's been a challenge that for which I am glad I have support in my mental capabilities, in my husband and in my family to a certain extent, in my coworkers, etc.
How have you been coping with the pandemic? Like, do you have anything that you've been finding comfort in?
Honestly, I would say, you know, having things to work on in the house that it's new has provided a great outlet for creativity, for frustration, for tears sometimes. But having, you know, a house that we have just for ourselves that we're responsible for,
yeah,
means that we have a lot more responsibility. And so I've taken that very much seriously. And things like having to clean the sidewalk and cut down the jungle that had been growing in front of our house, for which we got cited by the city. Those things, you know, while kind of annoying and having to clean the floors every weekend, but it also provides an outlet for normality and just kind of taking your mind off of the outside world.
Yeah, for real. I think if we were still in our condo before the pandemic, like right now during this time, it would have been harder to find those sort of things to do around the house. Like, it's just smaller space, smaller situation.
Not as much to do around there.
It's only, you know, only 600 square feet, so.
Yeah, yeah.
We would have been bumping into each other a lot. So let's get into a little bit about you. I think our listeners, Catherine, really wants to know about you. So let's start off with the basics. Like, where and when were you born?
So back in 1986, I was born in San Diego, California. I was a Navy baby. My parents had met while they were both in the Navy. And for the first 2 years of my life, I was in San Diego while my dad was on ships traversing the Pacific.
Where did you move after that?
We moved to most immediately to Massachusetts, where my grandparents lived, my mom's parents. And then we moved into our own house in Rhode Island for a few years before my parents got divorced.
What was it like growing up?
Generally speaking, I mean, it was always in the context of my siblings. And I can't say I'm super close to my siblings now. Like, I, you know, chat with them every once in a while, particularly with my younger sister. But I, you know, my childhood was framed by the fact that my parents were divorced pretty early when I was seven. Mm-hmm. And so we did a lot of moving around, both in terms of households, but also in terms of every other weekend having to travel 45 minutes with my dad to go to his house.
Yeah.
And like those car rides, I think, helped define who I was, because it was always a battle of who got the front seat and, you know, the war that happened in the back seat kind of stuff. So
these are the defining childhood moments.
These are the yes.
They've shaped you to who you are now.
Yes. If you want to know why I'm so confrontational sometimes or why I argue, it's because of those back seat shenanigans.
What were your parents like?
They were interesting in a, well, I don't know. That's...
Well, what were they like individually?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. So my mom is very, she's very uptight, and in a very, which I can completely understand being an adult now. She was the mother of three kids.
Yeah.
And then had another child with, who was kind of my stepdad. And then we had his son who would stay with us every once in a while. So it was a very large household, and got, it was always dirty, as always people. My brother was disgusting. and so she was always more manic in that sense of like,
I feel like you need to use softer words. Your mom might listen to this.
But I understand why, because there were like five kids sometimes trampling through the house, and very different personalities, very different needs. She was dealing with her own stuff, you know, obviously.
Yeah.
So I can understand why, to a certain extent, why she was the way she was. And I've inherited a lot of those things, I think, too.
Yeah, probably.
You know, keeping the kitchen clean in the same way that my mom does is, you know, a goal for me.
Did you feel the same way, though, when you were growing up? Did you understand that growing up?
No, well, kind of. I mean, we always made fun of my mom for needing a vacuum cleaner out in the kitchen. And that is something different about me. Like, she was never afraid to have that out, where I was like, literally, like, we would trip over it.
Wow.
Because she would vacuum so often. We also had a very hairy dog that shed like crazy. Oh, so it was not a match made in heaven in that sense.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I love my mom, but I wouldn't say I necessarily got along with her super closely.
Mm-hmm. What about your dad?
My dad was a little bit different, or I was actually talking to my coworker about this earlier today, where actually when my parents divorced, I was fully expecting to live with my dad because I was much closer to him. He was, you know, we'd go to Cub Scouts every week. We'd do T-ball. We'd do, you know, a lot of activities outside of the home that we went camping a lot. And so I always associated myself more with my dad, and so fully expected to live with him, actually. When that didn't happen, we still had a pretty close relationship, but obviously grew apart. And then, you know, as you get older, you learn things about your parents that you didn't have the capability of understanding when you were kids. Mm-hmm. And so now I understand a little bit better why my parents made the decision that they did based on the personalities of them.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting to think, you know, at my age now, my mom had three kids. And it is like, and in 2 years she would have had her fourth. And so
we don't have any.
We can barely take care of ourselves. Like,
her cat is a handful.
Oh my god. And so, you know, putting that into context of like, would I at the age of 27 been able to make the decision that they made? And I don't know that I would have been able to.
Yeah.
So or been able to approach it in a much more conscientious,
like
different
way. Like a mature way.
Yeah. Yeah. So I kind of understand why the decisions ended up the way they did.
How are they as, like, a parental unit?
Almost non-existent as a parental unit. Like, they almost never talked to each other when I was younger. And it was always, we were the communicators. Like, we were the transmitters of information.
To each other, like, back and forth?
Yeah.
Yeah. Even while they were still married?
No, I hardly remember when they were still married.
I see.
I was so young. But when they were divorced, we were often the people who would have to communicate, not knowing that we were actually serving as those roles, but...
Yeah. Yeah. But being forced into them anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you ever get into any trouble?
Never.
Really? What was the worst thing you remember doing as a kid?
Oh, my God. I mean... Around the house, even then I was not bad. Like, I would fight with my brother fairly frequently, and we'd get physical sometimes.
But did you never get in trouble for it?
We get in trouble for it. I do remember we would argue all the time, like the three siblings. We would always argue.
You, Nick, and Kelly?
Yes.
Was it like a free-for-all, or did, like, Kelly take your side, or Nick?
Oh, it depends. Oh, it was always a free-for-all. Usually there were sides in war, like, alliances would shift.
Yeah.
Fairly frequently.
Yeah.
But it was never, you know, set in stone. Hmm. Kelly was, like, always the troublemaker who never got in trouble.
Because she's the youngest.
Yeah, she would always instigate stuff, but never get blamed for it. But I do remember one time... We were with my dad, you know, my dad's girlfriends after they had divorced, and my brother and I were fighting like cats and dogs in his girlfriend's apartment, and
in your dad's girlfriend's apartment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he told us to stand in the corner.
Your dad.
So, yeah. And in front of his girlfriend's kids, my brother and I had to go in separate parts of the room and stand in facing the corner. And I remember crying and crying and crying. So we get in trouble with that way. But otherwise, I was a goody-two-shoes. Like, I never got in trouble in school. The worst... Like, I remember I was in eighth grade. I was told to go... I got called for detention because I forgot my homework assignment in my locker for 3 times in a month. And the teacher told me that I had, like... Oh, that means detention. And I remember everyone going, ooh, Chris got detention. And then I went to go, like, stay after. And the teacher was like, you don't have to stay here. So, like, I was, like, such a goody-two-shoes. And that remained the same throughout the entire college. Like, I don't think I ever drank in college.
I know.
Or in high school, rather.
We're watching, like, we watched 2 HBO shows with teens in them, and their lives are just so, like, crazy.
Yep. But if I could do it all again...
Yeah, you would? You would try
totes,
to...
Totes.
You do some ecstasy and have some sex.
I don't know. I feel like if I were to be a high school student now, like, you know that pot's not that bad for you. And so, like, I feel like maybe I could do that. Maybe a little bit of alcohol, but...
Well, let me ask you this, then. Would you feel comfortable if your kids did what you're talking about now? Like, drinking alcohol, smoking pot. Smoking pot. Do people smoke pot? I don't know.
Is pot
the smoke joints? Smoking joints? Okay, I don't know.
Do you know what pot is?
I'll edit this out.
Oh, please don't. This is great. To a certain extent. I mean, obviously, if, like, my child was a pothead, then that would need an intervention. But, like, smoking pot, you know, infrequently, I don't think is harmful enough to warrant, like, an intervention.
I feel like that would change... When you had the kid. Like,
yeah.
If the kid
quite
were.
Possibly.
Yeah. I feel like that would change.
Quite possibly.
Knowing you.
But also, now that I've seen all these shows, I'm like, well, it could be much worse.
I will say, though, like, I feel like the occasional beer or wine, like with the understanding that, hey, you can have this and it pairs well with food, and you know, sometimes it's fun to drink, but it's not something to abuse. Like, I think you have
the European the European method of like introducing wine for dinner in like high school.
Yeah, well, and I think part of it comes in, you know, nowadays, I think about it like this. You come into college and all you can think to do is just drink. Yeah. And you don't really have a really good appreciation for alcohol because, you know, like you're all of a sudden the floodgates are open and you're free to just try it and do it and drink and have fun and party.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a little overblown in kind of the binge nature of Americans in college, but I do think that is like, oh, it's illicit, but also easy to get.
Yeah,
that's the attraction.
And I feel like I haven't really gained an appreciation for aspects of beer and alcohol, beer and wine particularly, but even now in pandemic, liquor, until like actually getting to sit down and try it and like experience it.
Since I met you,
but you know, also pandemic, you know, and so just being able to open up our kids to those sort of experiences early on would help them sort of understand it later in life too, you know.
Yeah, possibly.
What was your best memory of childhood?
And by childhood, what do you mean? Like, what's the time frame that we're looking at?
Oh, well, that's a great question then. What do you think was your defining moment as an adult? And then work your way back.
My defining moment as an adult?
Yeah, when were you like, oh, fuck, I'm an adult now?
I mean, I think, like, putting in my first rent check was, you know...
So after college.
After college, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think to a certain extent when I was in France, but I think moving back with like my first full time, I remember going and visiting a high school friend in Boston, and she, like we went to her work before we went out to happy hour after, and like she had a desk for work, and I'd be like, oh my god, you're such an adult. Like, she had tortilla chips in her like desk cabinet that she just kept for snacks. I'm like, oh my god, wow, like you have your own space. And you,
god, I wish I had a desk nowadays.
Oh, I know, but that's, yeah, a slightly different situation, but
yeah.
And so I think following that, definitely moving down back down to DC, having to set up a budget, pay for rent, pay for groceries, learn how to cook for myself.
Oh, you like, set up a budget after college?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
You were so adult.
I know. It's because I had very little money. So I had to make sure I budgeted wisely for it. So that was probably my defining moment as an adult.
Okay. So working your way back... if that was your defining moment as an adult, what was your best memory of childhood?
So I would say my best memories of childhood kind of involved when I really blossomed in high school, which I would say was my junior and senior year.
When you say blossomed, did you like have sex?
No. But I like came in. No, God, girl, do you know me? No, I would say it's when I kind of came out of my shell and became a lot more extroverted. Mm-hmm. I tried new things. I got into theater. I got into student government. And I was actually just thinking about my experience in this really dorky program called Youth in Government, which involved, like, throughout the entire state of Massachusetts, people who were interested in government. And we basically did mock government at the state level.
U.S. government? Oh, Massachusetts government?
Yeah, but many states had this, and so they actually like had a national version of it.
Interesting.
But
I mean, I imagine it varies state to state depending on the state constitution.
Yeah, to a certain extent. But in general, you know, everyone has a governor, and everyone has a legislature, and everyone has a court system.
Yeah.
And I was in this program for, you know, all 4 years of high school. And by the senior year, I had decided to run for a particularly high office, which is Speaker of the House.
Oh.
My teacher advisor really wanted me to run for governor, and I was not interested in it. But Speaker of the House was probably, like, the most in the weeds of, you know, actually doing stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, there were hundreds of kids that did this, and I had to go and campaign to become Speaker of the House. And there was a vote. And, you know, we were like a no-name town that had never produced anyone who had gotten any sort of high office or anything in this program.
Yeah.
And I was like the first one. And looking back on that, like, that was a huge deal. I kind of played it off and I was like, oh, it's just for dorks kind of thing. Like, no need to look here.
Yeah.
And even forgot to mention it in, like, college applications.
Are you for real? Cases.
Yeah.
Wow, that would have been big.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But I didn't realize how big it was until afterwards. And I really had to put myself out there.
Yeah.
I got selected as the national team for the state of Massachusetts. And so we went down to North Carolina, of all places.
Jesus, this was like a process that you left off your resume.
Well, I left it on my resume. I just distinctly remember going in for a college interview and, like, completely forgetting to mention it. Like, I was so nervous.
Yeah.
And so, but between that, I was, you know, one of the stars of my high school play senior year. I was on the executive board for our student government.
Well, you did
my
a lot.
Senior year. So I was really active.
Yeah.
And so that was really blossoming. And I never considered myself a popular kid.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely came to realize that people looked up to me.
Yeah.
And saw me as a leader, even if I didn't necessarily see that in myself at the moment.
Interesting. Because I guess I see you as really charming. Like, you're so outgoing and you're so funny. And you're very witty. You're very quick-witted. You're able to make those off the cuff jokes. And
are you just gonna cut this out?
No. I am trying to have a very sincere moment.
I know. Also, you know, I can't take compliments very yeah, well.
I know. I'm just saying that I see you as a lot of things. Like, and so, I guess my question to you is, well, how did you see yourself in high school? Like, why? What was the picture that you had of yourself?
We consider ourselves kind of dorky, but not geeks. So, like, the group that I hung around with.
I see. Okay. Who was the group?
So it was, like, as actually, like, friends of mine who are still today. Like,
really?
The one person that I visited in Boston. She was my senior prom date.
Okay, so I'm thinking of two girls in particular, and let me describe them. As I see them now as adults, because obviously I didn't know them in high school. So one of them is up in Boston, and she's kind of quirky. She's, like, quirky, but she also just, like, kind of confident in her quirkiness. Like, she's just very
and, like, the bold. Funniest person I know.
Yeah, she's very funny. And is, like, obsessed with cats. Like, in fact, like,
that was what first drew you to her.
She's got this thing for cats, which, yeah, is fucking awesome. And then the other one who lives here with us and we see regularly.
Not in our house, but lives in D.C.
She's part of the regular friends circle. Mm-hmm. She's very type A. Like, I know I'm type A. She's, like, probably a level above me in mm-hmm. terms of type A-ness. And she just is very... What's the word? Like, she's
very poised, very classic, very, but also is, like, goofy in certain, but, like, in a measured sense.
Yeah.
Very hospitable and welcoming mm-hmm. and super conversational, but almost like a Martha Stewart almost. Like, you just kind of, she's just has an elegance to her.
I totally see that. Martha Stewart is almost like a really good way to describe it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, like, Martha's got, like, her own kind of thing. You know, she's got, like, an empire and is very powerful. But if you ever, like, watch Martha, like, talking to someone, she's also got a way of making people feel comfortable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which describes her perfectly.
Yeah.
So in high school, do you think that meshes well with the image that I have of them now?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yes, I would say so.
Yeah. Because, like, I just don't... Like, I could see you guys hanging out, but, like, dorky...
We were also, like, in the elevated advanced classes. We were always in, like, in the...
Like, the AP
classes. I wanted the top 10 kids in the school.
In my mind, though, let me kind of, like, level set for everyone. AP classes, when I was growing up, was always, like, the smart and the cool kids. Always. Everybody that...
And the cool kids.
And the cool kids. Like, just kind of everybody who was anybody kind of took those classes. Yeah. Not just the dorks, because obviously I took them and...
You know, well, that's what I mean, is that the... Like, we consider... So there are the geeks, not to create those grouping. But there was, like, the kids who would, like, you know, play Dungeons and Dragons. Mm-hmm. And those are different than the kids who did, like, super well in school, for the most part.
Right, 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 right. And
so we were the part of the group that did super well in school and were active and stuff. So and
you didn't play Dungeons and Dragons.
I did not.
I could see that. It's obvious in your adult
life. How dare you?
I never played it. So.
Yeah. So in high school, I was, yeah, to that point is like I dressed terribly. I wore, you know, clothes that didn't fit me. I was never bought my own clothes. My mom always bought them for me.
Was that just the style, though, back then?
No, it was not. No, it was definitely not.
But also, was part of that just you growing up, you know, like your family circumstances?
Part of it. It didn't excuse all of it. And why I, like, had to wear jeans that went past my heels and would always get holes in them. Yeah, like in high school, I was part of kind of the cool-ish crowd that did well in school and was motivated.
Yeah, you're cool to me.
Thanks.
Let's take a small pause and just fill me up with wine. Fill me up with wine.
Yeah. And this part of the segment is brought to you by... Goats du Rhone, a lovely Cote du Rhone imitator of red wine from Trader Joe's.
Trader Joe's, please sponsor us.
Trader Joe's, please sponsor us with red wine. So fruity and bold.
Okay, so more family questions. Okay. You ready? You ready for this?
Is my family ready for this?
What traditions have been passed down in your family?
That's a good question. And my mom, for one, is very into tradition and holidays. Christmas is a big one, for example. And you know this. She loves to... She loves to do things that have no practical reasoning right now. And
my favorite tradition your mom and her sister, Patty, have.
Yeah.
They love giving each other, like, tens and tens and tens.
Oh, yeah. They probably give each other, like, 20 to 30 gifts.
It's like a whole... It's a whole event in of itself.
Yeah,
it's,
but then they so have crazy. To... And then they always play the game like, oh, no, this is just a little something. Like, oh, this is a little something. And then it just, like, accumulates into this snowball of they're just giving each other gifts for an hour. And in some cases, they've even given each other the same gift because they are so similar in many ways.
I literally watched that last year.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah.
It's great, though. I love that they have this bond and that they just continued carrying it into adulthood. I don't know how, like...
I would actually say it's relatively recent that they started that, probably within the last 10 years.
Yeah.
But it's symptomatic of... how my mom views the holidays. And she's always, like, even today, she always needs to give a lot of gifts.
Yeah.
Even if they're not high in value. And she's transitioned away. I mean, as you get older, you kind of value more expensive things. But she, like, still needs to give a number of gifts and stresses over that. But even, you know, my grandmother had knitted or cross-stitched stockings for everyone.
Yeah.
And my mom was very close to my grandmother and so my mom does not cross stitch, but keeps those stockings that my grandmother had knitted 30 years ago,
yeah.
20 years ago, probably. I would say 20 years ago. And, you know, keeps that going. And so she has to have that. And, you know, when you came to visit, you had to have a stocking because you were part of the family.
Yeah.
Ming Ming had to have a stocking because she was part of the family. And so, you know, we kind of joke about decorating in our house for Christmas, but I think part of that comes from my mom.
Yeah.
That kind of desire to show some of that seasonal spirit, if you will.
Yeah. Your mom's love language is very much gift giving.
Yes. Like, she loves for sure. That.
Which I think, I wouldn't say it comes in conflict, but like, I'm also a minimalist.
Like, to some extent.
How dare you? Like, one of the things I remember her giving us, one of your relatives gave us was like mugs, and it was like, we have so many mugs.
My cousin
already. Yeah, like, we don't need this many mugs.
Yeah.
And she kind of took that to heart, is like, oh yeah, okay, note to self, no more mugs for Francis and Chris.
And it's your family also that gives us a lot of mugs.
Do they? Oh yeah. No, that's true. We don't need any more. For anyone who's listening out there, we don't need more mugs.
Yeah. That is definitely her love language.
So what traditions have you taken then? Like, is it the Christmas? The Christmas that you keep convincing me that we need?
I think that's definitely part of it. I think, you know, even Thanksgiving, like the need to have a Thanksgiving dinner, even despite your family's disgust of turkey.
Yeah, and that might be more my family not liking Thanksgiving than your family, you know, having it. Because, like, that's an American tradition.
Yeah, but I would say there are a lot of people who don't have a big Thanksgiving dinner if it's just two people, right? I mean, I used to invite exchange students to my apartment and would make a big Thanksgiving dinner for them.
Yeah.
Partly because that was a tradition, partly because I wanted to introduce an aspect of American culture for people who may not otherwise get that. But I wanted to do a Thanksgiving dinner partly because that was one of the few times that we actually ate dinner as a family growing up. And so it was pretty important in my mind, because it was important for my mom's mind to do that.
Did you take anything from your dad in terms of the tradition?
Not necessarily. Camping.
Household work. Home improvement.
Yeah, but my dad actually before this current house that he lives in, he always rented. I never knew him to have owned a house besides the house that my mom owned.
Yeah.
Back when I was 7. But otherwise, no. And, you know, I think that partly comes from not spending that much time with my dad. Although, I do have to say, his penchant for family reunions, like his part side of the family, were always so much better about gathering together as a family.
Yeah.
Not that I necessarily take that to heart as a tradition, but I value that part.
Yeah, I mean, you're sort of the black sheep in many ways, because you, one, do not live in Wisconsin or Massachusetts.
Because I did not move to Wisconsin.
Or Massachusetts. I mean, you have a good number of people in Mass.
Yeah, from my siblings, but not from my family. I mean, my family is spread out across the country, too.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, they're clustered in certain areas, but, there's always been people who have moved away.
You're the only relative here in D.C.
That's true, but not up until fairly recently.
Oh, right. You had that uncle.
I had an uncle who lived in the area. Yeah. And so, yeah, even then, I wasn't...
Yeah, you weren't talking to him.
I mean, I was. We'd see each other a few times a year. But yeah, I mean, I was definitely odd in that I moved away by myself to somewhere that I did not have a lot of support.
Who are your favorite relatives?
That's hard.
The actual question is who were, but some of your relatives are still alive. So it's like, well,
I would say, so I have two aunts that are like, I really appreciate and adore. Mm-hmm. So one's my Aunt Patty, who's my mom's sister. And she's the one that exchanges the gifts. And she's really been like a second mother, to me growing up and to all of my siblings. And so she was always like, she came to my high school graduation. Mm-hmm. She came down for my college graduation. She helped me move me into college.
Yeah. For context, your mom's siblings mostly live in like
Indiana,
right?
Yeah.
And it's just her and Patty in Massachusetts.
Now it is. And used to not be that way.
You were growing up, was that the case still?
Up to a certain point, my Aunt Laura did live in Massachusetts. My grandparents did summer with us.
Yeah.
But my aunt and uncle did live in Indiana for most of the time that I've known them.
Yeah.
But my Aunt Patty was like, she was just fantastic. I remember on my 12th birthday, we went on a whale watch, together. It was like just the two of us spent the entire day together, and it was magical and wonderful. And so she was like, she's always super important in my life.
Yeah. She's very intelligent. She's very witty. She's super witty.
Yeah.
I remember, us playing, what is that game called? Telestrations? She's so funny.
She's so good at, you know, up to a point, but, she's so good at, like, situational comedy and, like, saying very witty things. I take a little bit of that from her.
And she's intelligent. Like,
she's, like, super
well-read. Yeah.
You know, she never went to college or anything, but she keeps up with the news and
has very informed opinions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She does. And so she's always been really important to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, she would always tell stories of, when I was, an infant and young baby growing in San Diego, and she would call me, and she always tells the story. She'd call me and, you know, talk to me on the phone, so to speak. And then when she came out to San Diego to visit for the first time, and apparently I was very frightened of her because it was a stranger. And so then she hit around the corner and she'd be like, "Chris, it's Aunt Patty." I would apparently call her O Potty, actually. and then at that point, like, once I recognized the voice, came running after her because I had grown so close to her.
Yeah.
And so those are like the amazing points from childhood that I still, if I don't remember, I still reflect on. And I do remember like her coming over to the house and always having a surprise for us. And it would always be like candy or a toy or something. So she was very formative in my life, the entire childhood.
Yeah.
And then I would say the other person is my Aunt Bobby.
Yeah.
Who lives in Minnesota, my dad's sister. I've always appreciated her, maturity and elevated taste, even though she, you know, is not necessarily from a high-end family.
Yeah.
You know, she like, you know, grew up in a small town in Wisconsin and moved to Minneapolis. And you know, but she was always so, you know, well polished and super kind and very generous, but also would tell you like it was.
Yeah.
And not be afraid to challenge something that she heard.
Yeah.
And so I just always appreciated conversations with her because she had a well balanced view of the world.
I think I remember one of the first stories you told me of your aunt, and this is when you came out to her and how accepting she was of you.
Yeah. I mean, my whole family has been super accepting.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do remember specifically, and even though, you know, I she may have actually known a few gay people in her life that I wasn't necessarily super familiar yeah. with, but
I'm sure, probably.
Yeah, she, yeah, was incredibly accepting while we were dancing on the dance floor to my other aunt's wedding. Yeah.
So, do you want to do marriage questions now? I guess that's all I have.
Okay.
Marriage. Okay. what are your favorite stories about me?
I would say my favorite story is about you. So, obviously, our relationship has changed over the years. But I remember being so thankful afterwards for you being so persistent early on in the relationship.
Really?
Yeah. I've told you this before. That you were always the one to suggest dates, like going on dates.
Yeah.
And you always kind of pushed the envelope a little bit. Like you were the first one to say, I love you. You were the first person to say, I'm ready to marry you. And you were just persistent. Like yeah. it was sometimes annoying.
Yeah,
because I may not have been in that same position, but you know, looking back on that, that I think that helped move our relationship forward.
Yeah,
and I think the same way, like we approach the same way that we do, which sounds so boring, but like our finances, like we were in a such much better shape because you drove that conversation and you yeah. made it uncomfortable for us, but required us to take a hard look at ourselves.
I will put a different spin on this, and I think that we balance each other out, though. Like, because you are more risk-averse. Like, I like to put it that way. It's like, you like to think more about what could go wrong, whereas I think more of the opposite end. And that is a great balance, because, like, yeah, sometimes you have to think about the risks. You have mm-hmm. to kind of think, well, is this too dangerous for our situation right now? You know, should we maybe scale back a little? Mm. Like, I think that's where we kind of balance each other out. Like,
yeah.
where I'm willing to kind of push the envelope in your words, you're willing to kind of rein things in and just kind of be more realistic.
Yeah. And that creates conflict.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
for sure. I mean, that's an inherent conflict.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, we've managed to find at least a happy medium.
Yeah.
Or a medium. I don't know if I'd call it happy sometimes. It's definitely a medium. We found
compromise.
Yeah.
And that I think that is important. And we find ourselves in a pretty enviable position, I think, in being financially stable and being in a good relationship. Mm-hmm. Being able to pursue things, being able to travel when we're not under COVID pandemic restrictions, that we've been able to pursue kind of life's happiness
yeah.
in ways that we wouldn't have been able to either separately or if one of us had, you know, taken over all the decision making.
Yeah. Do you ever get annoyed by my persistence?
Yes.
what is the first one that comes to mind?
The first one that comes to mind, or like the most recent one?
Either or. I mean, if you can think of the most recent one, then that's the thing that comes to your mind.
The most recent one is probably that freaking plant tower that you wanted to buy.
I'm looking at him right now. Okay, but let me provide some context. There's this really great composter / plant tower called the Garden Tower Project, for any of you who want to research this. And what it is, it's this tower. And in the middle of this tower...
He is gesticulating so hard right now.
There is a compost tube where you put the worms in and you put your compost in. And the compost gets transplanted, I don't know, whatever. The worms transport the compost. Chris is giving me a weird look throughout the rest of the plants, and the plants all just kind of like live in this great
symbiotic. Yeah, no doubt it is an effective composting unit, but it's also like 5.5 feet tall by like 3 or 4 feet wide.
And we have a backyard.
Like, and we are transforming the back. It is a very small backyard and we are doing renovations to it.
Has it been bought yet? I haven't bought it.
No, you bought it. You bought it for your parents with the eye to say, to think that they're not going to use it. And every time we've gone down there since they've got it, you're like, we should bring it back.
I've never said that. I bought it for Father's Day. My dad, who said he really appreciated the gift.
Yeah, and when we saw it unused last time, you're like, well, I guess we're taking this home.
Wow, and that annoyed you?
I mean to say is that, like, the persistence in doing that is, like, I think, I mean, one of the things I love about you that is also frustrating is that you go through phases of interests.
Phases of interests.
So, like, right now it's vinegar and composting.
It's not...
Before it was candle making.
Okay. Huh.
Before it was, What are the other projects that you've had? Plants have been a consistent one, but...
Well, but so, yeah, like, there's a difference between phases, and then there's a difference between interest, right? Mm-hmm. A phase implies that I stopped, like, I will stop caring. Yeah. Like, candle making, I grant you, is a phase.
Baking?
Baking is a interest for the pandemic times. Maybe I'll pursue it afterwards, I have no
idea. So it's a phase.
You know I'm not that good at it. You know I'm not that patient for it. Like, yeah. I don't have the patience.
So it's a phase for right now.
It helps us get through, and I just like pursuing different projects. It's fine. But I think part of it kind of stems from an overall interest to be more sustainable. You know this about me.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
But, to the point is that that's what I love about you, but it's also frustrating in some ways.
The vinegar is going to be great. You're going to love it.
You don't even like vinegar. That's the that's the funniest part is that you hate vinegar things.
If it's pear vinegar, I might love
it. No, you won't. It's still going to be sour and you're not going to like it.
Hold on. This is where the complimentary part of our marriage comes in because you love vinegar.
How dare you?
Am I wrong?
I do like vinegar, but also, like, do not... Whatever, let's move on.
Wow. Okay. These are one of the last questions I'm going to ask you. You ready? Mm-hmm. What do you feel most grateful in your life?
I feel most grateful that I found a partner who compliments me.
After you just bash me in that last question.
But, you know, honestly, like, day-to-day life, we forget when we're around each other all the time. Like, we have literally not spent more than I think the longest we spent apart was probably 3 or 4 hours when you and Donica went down to your parents' house.
Yeah.
Like, I think it was the only time that we were apart since March.
Yeah.
Before then. And, like, despite all of our idiosyncrasies, we have not had, like, a major fight since that time.
That's true. Since March. I mean, like, even before March, I can't think
of
anything.
Yeah, we've had arguments and stuff, but,
yeah,
you know, even through, like, fights that were, like little serious squabbles. Ones.
Yeah.
I feel thankful that I've found someone who is quirky.
Quirky? Me?
Yeah. All right. Apparently not super self-aware. Accepts me for being who I am. Like, all the parts of me. Who is persistent, who is intelligent and strives to be curious, but, like, so just someone in general that I am so happy to, you know, challenge life with. And I have this morbid thought every once in a while, like sometimes when you go running without your glasses on in the morning and I tell you to be safe, and I like whenever you take a little bit longer than normal, I like have this terrible thought of you like getting hit by a car.
Yeah.
And that brings into my mind of like everything that I will have lost if I were to lose you. And it is a terrible feeling.
Yeah.
And so, because there's no one out there like you, and
I'm sure there's at least one.
I don't know. I'm sure we could look on Grindr and find someone to replace part of the void. But
was that a sexual joke?
No. But yeah, I mean, I think it's just very lucky that I found someone who is as quirky as me and appreciates my quirks as much as I appreciate his. And so, despite all the morbid thoughts, it brings me back to being thankful that I have you. So that is what I am most thankful of. Also that I now have a job that pays the bills.
You've had a job that pays the bills for at least a
barely paid the bills. Barely.
Well, I'm thankful that I have you. That's why you're on this podcast right now. That's why you're my very first interviewer.
Interviewee.
Yeah. Thank you for being part of my life. I appreciate you a lot.
Appreciate you. I appreciate you.
Appreciate
as you. I appreciate, as Alaska Thunderfuck would say.
That's it for our show, folks. I'm your host, Francis Tan. Follow us on our Instagram at hkvf.productions. We post every other week. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and wherever else you get your podcasts. And until next time, the best ship to sail on is friendship.